Hi, and welcome to Matrix Moments. Happy New Year and wishing everyone a fantastic 2020. I have with me Avnish, Tarun and Vikram, Managing Directors at Matrix, and my name is Rajinder. I want to do a quick look back to 2019 and capture some of the macro themes from the year. In some ways, it's been a record year for the Indian VC industry and a very busy year for Matrix. How would you characterize the year for us and for the market? If I look back, I see deal pace has gone up. We've done a record 20 deals in the year. We've seen the emergence of the famous founder archetype, people who've been there, built successful companies and starting up a second time or a third time. We've seen examples of companies scaling up to become unicorns within 2 years, some cases within a year. And we've seen a lot of activity from large global investors, domestic investors. What has 2019 been like for the firm and for the market in your view?
I think 2019 has been an exciting year for us. It's probably been our biggest year in terms of number of deals done. And we've done over 20 deals. But I would say that's a very small part of the overall story for the ecosystem. I think it's been a very busy year in a very good way. Firstly, we've probably backed the most diverse set of founders in 2019. So whether it is serial entrepreneurs, or whether it is young founders, whether it's people coming from FMCG backgrounds, people who have given pitches completely in Hindi. So very diverse backgrounds, but also going after multiple sectors. So we've done investments in 5 and 8 tech, continue to do investments in fintech, continue to double down on e-commerce and especially social commerce and travel and transport. So it's also been these founders who are going after multiple sectors. So diverse founders, diverse sectors, which is why it's been super interesting. It's also that we've seen the emergence in our portfolio and across the ecosystem of, call it, real companies with revenue of $50 to $100 million, getting at most times real valuations and at some times frothy valuations. And finally, I think exits have become more of a choice rather than you thinking where an exit is coming from. So you're making trade-offs on whether to sell, when to sell, once a company is actually matured and become bigger.
I think the other theme that we should call about is we've seen a lot of consumer brands, DinVibs as they're called. So multiple new investments in that sector. We're just seeing overall, as the market is deepening, we're able to see founders taking a thin slice out of that market and say, hey, this is the opportunity I'm going to go after. Here is where I can build a large opportunity. And it's early days for some of these companies, but as sort of GDP spend on these categories goes up, we do believe that there will be real companies that will come out of that.
And we've been the most aggressive also in terms of check sizes. So Ola Electric is a $15 million investment. There is another investment coming up which hasn't been announced, so we can't talk about it. But I think by the time this airs, it'll be clear, and that's a $12.5 million investment. Country Delight, again, we are doing an internal round there, that'll be $12.5 million. So I would say that sometimes I worry whether that's the right sizing of the check size. But as markets deepen and as opportunities become clearer, it feels right. And I would say this year, that Vikram led an investment with Jitain and Amica, which is known kind of as the largest seed that has happened. So I think we've been more aggressive. We think obviously it's in line with the market. But we should recognize that there is an element of concept risk that one is taking. And obviously the hedge against that is that these founders are extremely experienced. They are off to the races with org building, which a lot of the younger ones take a while to figure out. So hopefully all good on that front. But I would say feel very good about the deal volume, seems to be in line with the depth of the market, but also the most aggressive we've ever been.
No, so I'm going to pick up on the first theme on which Vikram spoke of, which is just deal pace. That sounds like a lot for an early stage fund. And what's your sense? Like, what do you think is the right deal pace for a market like India? And should that change as the market deepens?
So, honestly, we don't define deal pace. Actually, the founders and markets do. So as company creation is getting faster and faster, it's up to us to actually keep pace with that company creation. And founders keep discovering new markets. So honestly, this year, we've actually just kept pace with that. We've probably also been looking in much wider set of areas. Right? So we started looking much harder in edtech. Honestly, we were looking hard also in agri-tech and logistics tech. We could have even done more deals if we had actually found investments in those areas. So it's just that we have actually kept pace with the market. So if you look at maybe the last 3 months of the year, the company creation hasn't been as fast. So if that slows down, then it might end up being a slow year in 2020. So we're just keeping pace with the market. And also the fact that as tech starts penetrating more and more sectors, you start finding more tech-enabled opportunities in every sector. That said, I think one of the things that we are very careful about is the team's bandwidth, because at the end of the day, you can only make so many good decisions in a short period of time. So that's one. And the second thing that we care about the most is to make sure that our founders get, we're available to founders when they need us, and we're also able to create portfolio impact, especially in early stage companies. So we probably have the largest team on the ground in the venture space, if not the largest. So we're able to provide that coverage across the board to these portfolio companies. So when we see that breaking, both our freedom to make good decisions as well as the fact that we are not able to actually cover our portfolio, that's when I think we will really start worrying. And there have been times when we are worried and we course correct pretty quickly.
I think the other way to look at it is just as a, you know, we're a $300 million fund, we typically want to deploy over a 3 to 4 year period. If I look at where we would like to end up, it's somewhere between 50 to 75 investments in the fund, right? Median check size of 3 to 5 million, right? Between seed and series A. Now, as we are going early, you will start seeing us obviously make additional investments where, you know, we call it, you know, be loose at entry, but we're trying to make sure that we're taking enough risk while at the same time, you know, being capital efficient in terms of where we're allocating dollars in the companies that work. Second is there are just opportunities that 2 or 3 years ago didn't seem, you know, sort of practical in terms of large companies coming out, gaming. But now we're seeing with the amount of, you know, with what's happened with Jio, with what, you know, data consumption, it feels like one can build a large company in gaming. Take agri-tech. Hard to imagine 2 years ago, you know, large number of, you know, people in the agri-tech economy actually, you know, using mobile. We're starting to see a lot of that beginning to happen. Social commerce, WhatsApp penetration amongst both consumers and businesses, both on the B2B and the B2C side, has enabled sort of business models which till now didn't seem real, or at least didn't seem well penetrated enough. And so I think the idea is to go early after these emerging themes. And just in terms of that, I think the deal pace that we've done this year and hopefully what we'll do next year seems to be in line with the opportunity.
So let me ask you this. I know you've done a lot of this analysis prior. Let's say between 10, 11 and 16, 17, how many large companies emerge every year? Or an investment was made where the company ultimately became large?
Probably, if you just use a billion, you know, unicorn as a metric of, you know, large company, let's call it somewhere in the range of about 12 unicorns.
Total, over that period
over
of
that
time.
Period
so it's
time.
One to two a year, right?
1 to 2 a year.
And if you look out 5 years, that number is probably going to be 40 or 50. So we are probably at 3 to 4 a year, right? I mean, therein lies the answer. So if it was 1 to 2 and it's going to 3 to 4, hopefully our hit rate goes up. I'm not so sure. You know, we did an analysis and we managed to catch a good company every 1 to 6 investments, every 5 to 6 investments. So simply by that logic, and you assume that the market has deepened, you should be making more investments. There's an inherent error rate in this business. And the more you try to, you know, try to become maybe more regimented, I actually believe the error rate goes up. And therefore, part of it is you just say, we don't know, and we have to be more loose at entry, assuming the call or that the market is deepening is correct.
I'm going to connect something that each of the three of you said. So one, you said more large company creation that's coming through 1 to 2 before, 3 to 4 now. You said, you know, tech is now getting into sectors which hadn't been penetrated as well before. You spoke of, you know, some sectors seeing just great company creation and tech penetrating into, you know, existing GDP. How do you all take this call on, you know, new ideas and new GDP and tech kind of capturing incremental GDP versus tech going after existing GDP and just making existing models more efficient?
So we had spoken about it as our thesis for Fund 3. And there was a thought that for Fund 3, that's going to be the way it is. And which was that if you fundamentally look at GDP per capita, We are in the middle income country zone, which is about $2,000 to $3,000 per capita, right? That when it goes from 3 to 6 or 7 is the journey where a lot of consumption takes off. So we took a call and we said, at this stage, the right strategy for Fund 3 is to disrupt existing GDP digitally, as opposed to incremental digital GDP. Now, what does that mean? It sounds like a mouthful. The former is more transaction businesses. Go after a spend that already exists. You know, Ola is not giving you a new spend. Most of it, you were traveling. It substituted a spend. So it has captured existing GDP digitally. A lot of the lending businesses are capturing existing borrowing digitally. However, if you look at Daily Hunt in our portfolio, if you look at, let's say, Dream 11, which is outside our portfolio, these are capturing incremental digital GDP. This is new spend that is coming onto these platforms, right? So the call was that at this stage, disrupting existing GDP is going to be the right answer and we're going to stick to it. But if you ask me, I think this trend is changing faster than we expected. And what may have been a Fund 4 strategy, I think we need to think harder about even next year. Is that something we need to be, you know, more over-indexed, thinking through examples like gaming companies? We are making an investment that's not closed yet, which is also going to be this. So I think that in our business, the only constant is change. And I think that's something we need to keep in mind.
So essentially you're saying you made a thesis and it's wrong.
You made the thesis.
I <How shocking. laughs>
No, but for founders who are listening to this, I think that's very interesting, because I guess people have been kind of coming up with ideas going after incremental GDP for a while, but it sounds like finally that opportunity is kind of coming alive. Is that kind of playing out into some of the investments that, you know, have been made in 2019, or that the opportunities that we're beginning to see looking into pipeline for 2020?
I think absolutely. I mean, like Avnish said, there are two areas which are entertainment and overall gaming. You're seeing new time spent coming on, right? Whether it's for gaming or whether it's for entertainment, and new ways of monetizing, consumers paying for that entertainment, or advertisers actually paying wherever the large platforms exist. So that's one clear trend that you're seeing. I think the other one, which is sort of SMEs adopting tech, and you know, if you look at 2019, it's probably the emergence of the Indian SME, which has started using WhatsApp for everything, whether it is customer service or payments or marketing. They just use WhatsApp for everything. And you can find many future companies in that use case that SME is doing. Now, there's always a question whether that SME is willing to pay, because then that would be incremental GDP that's getting created, because it's software that they're buying, which they didn't buy before. Or there are other monetization models. But that would be sort of one trend to watch out for in 2020.
But you know, if you look at OTT platforms, so I believe there is always some stimulus that comes into a market from outside, which takes it to the next level, and you generally find out after the fact. So obviously one was Jio, that was clear to everybody, data consumption went up. I think last year was the year of OTT, and all these, I'm assuming people know, Netflix, Amazon, Hotstar, so on and so forth. It has become, it's a very deep adoption. It's not a creme de la creme 1% adoption. If you look at all the shows that are coming out, they're going very deep into the market. You know, all strata of society are watching. I think that's a very big deal. Because to his point, A, you're consuming, but B, you're paying. Now, some of the price points are not sustainable, but I think it's changing this whole incremental digital GDP. Obviously, without Jio, it wouldn't have happened, but it's a very big deal.
No, but it's changing consumer behavior, right? For the first time, we're starting to see, I mean, millennials were always, okay, cut the cord, right? They didn't want cable TV. Today, you're seeing, like, you know, just more masses are, you know, shows like Mirzapur, number one show on Amazon Video. The reality is it's actually catering to that audience, saying, what does it take to bring that next 30, 40, 50 million people online, get them used to watching content on the devices and pay for it. And so I think we're starting, while the price points today are low, over time, the bet has to be that these people, once they get hooked to it, are going to be willing to pay more.
And I think, don't forget that the more mass India becomes digitally, the more the onus remains on innovative business models. So, I mean, your FMCG background, the sachets, right, which was a unique to India innovation. We have to do all of that in this economy as it is becoming digital, have the sachet pricing, have all those innovations. You can't get away from that. But the point is, it seems like the time has come.
Yeah, and to that point on sachet pricing, before, it wasn't possible because your CAC was too large and it was because you had only 20 million people that you could address. But now you have 300 million people to address, the CACs have come down. And at least if you think about growth hacks and are able to acquire consumers socially, then the CACs have come down. Therefore, that sachet pricing is now possible.
I mean, it sounds like 2020 is looking and sounding really exciting. So I'm going to...
Who said that? No.
I think I'm going
to... We were talking about the first 9 months of 2019. So,
but if I ask you, like, what are some of the challenges for a venture firm? It sounds like, you know, companies, if they find product market fit, can take off really, really fast. Does that mean that deal velocity is just going to keep going up? And, you know, companies that, you know, find that PMF are going to, like, start raising very, very large rounds like they've begun to raise in 2019. And is that a challenge for the, you know, for the VCs out there?
So I think in the first 9 months of 2019, it was a lot more broad-based. Pretty much anything that showed very early signs or green shoots of something working or getting funded. My view, and I guess a collective view, is 2020 is going to be different. We're already seeing some version of a correction that has happened. Companies that have raised and are well capitalized, you know, would be sort of wise to use that capital well, because our view is things have slowed down already. It's not going to be as easy as it was in the first 9 months of 2019. That said, you know, the reality is good companies get funded in any environment. Sometimes the best companies are created in those environments. And so for an early stage investor like us, you know, 2020 seems like a more normal year, hopefully. We'll see how it plays out. But, you know, hopefully it should give us more time to, you know, spend with these companies, more time to see how their, you know, their trajectory, more time to diligence, so on and so forth, right? From a late stage deal velocity perspective, do we expect it to be anything like what we've seen in 19? Unlikely. A lot of the funds that have come in have taken their bets across sectors. I think they will want to see, wait and see how some of those play out before recommitting. At least that's my view. I don't know what.
So I'll give. I think the framework I think about it, and you guys know this. There's the 0 to 1, which is early PMF. Then there is 1 to 10, which is scalable PMF, and then there's the scalable profitable PMF, which is, you know, 10 to infinity. Historically in India, I mean, we've all been doing this 12, 13 years, and it's been painful that to get early PMF would take time. To get scalable PMF, to see a hockey stick going, maybe we saw that in Ola, that also 6-9 months into the investment, right? It wasn't on day one. So that hockey stick we weren't seeing, nobody was seeing. 2019 was the first time that started showing up. I think people got so excited by that they forgot whether there is a scalable, profitable PMF. So the business model risk that people have taken in those is already, in some cases, we are hearing playing out, right? And even that scalable PMF that one thinks a company has could be a false positive, because people are taking the call so early that you don't really know if, you know, what are the underlying parameters with which it has happened. So I think, you know, jumping forward a little bit, I think it's the exciting part is it's the first time you can see companies going like this. But I think that's where everybody, always, by the way, I think this is normal. This is a creative destruction business. Disruption only happens when you have disruption even in funding cycles, right? So this is normal, then it blows up. But in the meantime, you get a lot of good companies, some not so good companies that get funded behind a trend that is correct. The trend is correct. The companies may or may not be taking the best approach to that trend. So once that blows up, the best companies emerge out of it. So these cycles, I mean, now I sound old, but these are so normal.
You are.
they are so normal. And I think we are at the end of that cycle right now. So the end of that disruption cycle, where now companies that have raised a lot of capital that they were saying will need to hunker down and say, where's the real business model? Where's the real traction? Is it driven by cohorts or is it driven by spending?
Yeah, and just to take off on that point, I think, you know, traditionally, a lot of venture-backed companies in the US and in China the traditional sort of wisdom was, if you have enough users and usage, you will find a business model. I'm not so sure that India plays out exactly the same way, because I think ability to monetize in some of those sectors is going to be harder, right? So there was a time for a long period of time, people are like, can Facebook ever monetize, right? Will ever be profitable? And we've seen just how wildly successful they've been. I think in India, we're seeing across sectors a lot of usage. It's to Avnish's point, while the macro trend may be true, in specific cases, I think we will see companies that will find it hard to monetize that activity. Or they will have to be very, very creative, and it may take much longer than they think it will.
So, you know, as investors, very simplistically, all investors like growth and return on capital. And if you have both these things, then you know you have a great invest. As VCs, we index on growth because you're trying to shorten time in the early stages. So you're trying to make sure that you invest in advance and actually shorten time. So you're investing in growth. In the middle to in the late stages, you're more clearly indexed on return on capital. In the middle stages, it swings a bit, where markets are looking at growth at a premium, which is what happened in 2019. I think 2020, the return on capital, it will be that sort of that push, the same thing that Avnish was talking about, which is now return on capital will make a push, and you will need evidence of that return on capital in these companies, either by unit economics or ideally a scalable EBITDA model. Now, I think the advice for founders is, in this period, really figure out what is the capital strategy which feels authentic to you. All founders don't need to follow a strategy which says, I need hundreds of millions of dollars or more, or billions of dollars to actually find my profitable business model. There are other ways of building this. And find the capital strategy which feels more authentic to you during this period.
That's good advice. Anything that you all would like to add, just in terms of, you know, one or two words of advice for founders for 2020 navigating this external environment?
So I would say, picking up from the earlier point, one is, look, I'm not going to say anything that's not written everywhere, which is growth versus profitability. This is the time to think about profitability as well. I think they have heard enough of that. I think on a more positive note, I think they need to, there is a lot more change that has happened in 19 on the core fundamental level, like you were talking about incremental digital GDP versus, you know, disrupting existing GDP. So all these new models. 2-3 years ago, if somebody was going to start something really, really new, my advice would have been, don't do it. I think today there's barely anything that one shouldn't take a shot at. Global products coming out of India, we are seeing a trend. Electric vehicles, we are seeing a trend. Mobility, even after Ola, Uber, new companies get started, we are seeing a lot of that. E-commerce, I think, will continue to be disrupted for a while. This whole social commerce. Fintech, we have done a bunch of neobanks, and Vikram has a podcast on that. I think it will continue. It's just a different sliver. So I actually feel very positive, and let me make, I know at some point you were going to talk about predictions, just moving ahead. You know, 2016 was a bust year. And I think towards the end of 2016, we backed maybe 4 or 5 teams that were coming out of these companies. And they were the experienced founder archetype, right? I think you might see an acceleration next year of this experienced founder archetype. Now, some of it may be for the wrong reasons, because they've seen a lot of these people be able to raise a lot of capital. So they are saying, okay, maybe if I go out, I can raise 5, 10, 15, 20. There, my advice is, the world has changed. Don't start a company because you believe that you'll be able to raise 20. 10 will be the new 20, or 5 will be the new 10, for sure. That change would have happened. But at the same time, looking back at 16, I remember some of these companies that were going through hyper growth phases, where there were these very experienced set of executives or, you know, founder material people, they didn't want to leave when the company were going through hyper growth phases. Next year, my view is, a lot of these companies will be in a consolidation phase. That's when they feel their loyalty is done, they have delivered, they have stuck through, and a lot of them will come out. And in some cases, there is consolidation amongst companies. And I remember in 2016, this trend playing out, and 4-5 teams coming out. Then there was a little bit more after the Flipkart exit, where I think next year we'll see a bunch of experienced founders coming out, which is a great sign. I mean, Last time also they came out when the Boeing was, when you know the bubble had burst. Google, Facebook were all founded during recessions. So I think in my view, that's something that we may get surprised by on the upside.
Yeah. No, I think super helpful. I think you've kind of spoken of, you know, the macro trends, predictions. I guess the one thing that we haven't spoken of is Matrix. I was just wondering, how is Matrix going to look different in 2020? I know there's a bunch of things that we're doing different. Anything that you'd like to share with founders out there?
So this is one of those tough questions because we are actually going through our own strategy on what does 2020 look like for us. And I think it's probably three, four things. The first is how do we ensure that we stay on a reasonable investment pace, which is in line with the market, and making sure that we're not concentrated in one area versus the other, which essentially means we're going to expand our investment team. And adding both people who are more from traditional backgrounds, guys who are analyzing businesses for a living before, as well as founders who are catching on very early trends in a way that an analyst can never. And we're going to have that healthy mix in our team, and we're going to continue to add more people to the team. The second is we're going to make all these investments, and we need to help our companies. And I know you're playing a huge role in building our platform, which helps our portfolio. We've invested behind human capital as like probably no other VC. We have four, and I call it four and a half because we have others also playing that role. We've had networks and communities as a new function on the platform. We're likely to add more in terms of portfolio services that I know you want to keep under wraps, but I would say we're going to keep building that team such that the investment team gets a lot of leverage to be able to help our portfolio. That's probably the second. The third is for our LPs, we've got a continued commitment to actually manage the portfolio and manage it towards exits. Like we said, we've got different choices along the way to make, but that's again going to be a priority for us.
I would pick up on the last point. If you look at from the investor standpoint, the bane of Indian VC has been exits. Fortunately, if you remember last year when we were chatting, we said 2018 will be remembered for Flipkart, but the good news is it should be remembered for a lot more. And we've seen a bunch of news crossing the wires, whether it's OYO exit, you know there's been a Ola exit, Byju's, so Paytm, so on and so forth. I think it's a new muscle that VCs need to develop, which is exits, which by the way, we should have developed right in the beginning, but there was no market. And I think it's exciting because we are having in one of our companies, actually two, conversations around IPOs. And then US IPO, Indian IPO, what are the trade-offs, when do you start? It's actually very exciting. I mean, one of the companies in our portfolio, actually two went public earlier, W after we exited and Treehouse before that. But it's a very different piece. If you look at the US VCs, global VCs, they spend so much time. So many articles coming out recently about direct listings and so on and so forth. So I think managing exits, it's a job. And I don't think we didn't have the luxury to do that job. And it was more by serendipity or it happens to you, as opposed to something that you work consciously to.
And the exit happen. Windows were very few and far between. I think we're starting to see, just as the pace of value creation is increasing, exit windows are coming more frequently, and hence the choice is becoming even more real about, listen, do I sell now or do I wait a little bit more? Right? Because you know that, or you know, the hope is that the exit window isn't shut for a very long time after that.
I think pick up on this because we're talking about exits. I think the pace of M&As and smaller M&As, smaller profitable M&As, is likely going to get faster and faster. And I think the trend is that we now have currencies that matter in the industry. So you have currencies that are likely, when I say currency, it's stocks of other companies which are likely to go IPO, which investors and founders both believe in. That's when you start seeing M&A and consolidation happening. I was having this conversation with a founder earlier this year who ended up selling to one of the big unicorns, and he essentially said, hey, he turned down a funding round and he said, hey, I believe in this currency and I don't think I want to keep raising money, but I want to keep building this business and I'm getting that comfort with this founder, so I'm actually going to swap into this company. And all investors supported him. And I think we are going to see more and more of that.
Exciting. Thank you.
So I think on a closing note, you know, to your point on 2020 as Matrix, Warren Buffett makes one statement, which is people who are great investors don't know investing 201, 301, 401, whatever you want to call it. They just do investing 101 more consistently on a daily basis. And I think that's our job for next year. But I think, you know, looking at this wall behind us, we talk about this all the time. Want to make a big thank you to the founders. I know that's my shower test, everybody here. It is getting more and more exciting. Every cycle, every bubble has a better set of founders. And you know, when that bubble bursts, and you're with a set of this really, really strong people, that's what keeps us going. So thanks again, and hopefully 2020 is great for all of us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and you can find the transcribed version of this podcast on matrixpartners.in. You can also follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more updates.